Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren. I'm joined today by Tom, the savings captain. Tom had a 30-year career in financial services as an advisor and leader with several large investment and stock brokerage firms. Tom holds several FINRA licenses and a CFP designation. Tom recently joined social media and podcasting as a way to utilize his investing and personal finance knowledge to help others sort through the maze of investing. You can find Tom on X, formerly Twitter, as at the Savings Captain, and be sure to listen to his podcast, Money Happy Hour. In 2024, Tom will be expanding his reach to help those that struggle with debt forever, wealth never. Thanks for joining me, Tom.
Lauren, no, the thanks is all mine. Thanks for having me. I have a bucket list item crossed off the list again on one of the best podcasts out there and definitely the best interviewer out there. The honor is all mine, Lauren.
You are too sweet. And you probably saw my tweet that that was my favorite compliment. So good job.
Parted compliment. Seriously, before, as we were getting to know one another, I was like, holy cow, this person is just a great interviewer.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm blushing. Which, by the way, guys, you can see my blush if you want. It's on YouTube at Adulting is Easy. Okay, so our goal for today is to make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. So today, probably listeners can tell from your bio, Tom, that we're going to talk about financial advising and planning. And that's actually my first question is, like, what's a financial advisor? What's a financial planner?
I think they can be one and the same, or they can be two completely different things. When I think of a financial planner, it's like a person is going to look at your whole financial picture, or at least a good one. And if you are going with a financial planner, go for an accredited one, someone that actually carries the marks from the Certified Financial Planning Board. It's a pretty rigorous test. There's a lot of continuing education in on it. So I always say, you know, if you really care about your money, care about it in a way and try to go for the best of the best.
So which one of those would actually, like, put your assets under management?
I think both of them would be clawing for your assets. A financial advisor certainly would want them. But you could also be a financial advisor, as in your title, could be a financial planner or certified. But, you know, to my earlier point, you'd probably, if you really want to have your assets managed by a professional, you know, it's just like any kind of professional that you associate with, right? Who do you feel comfortable with? Who has your goals in mind? But I'd at least start looking for, you know, when I had to have a person do my taxes, when I've had complicated tax filings, which I think in soon I'm going to need that again. You know, you can walk into an H&R Block office, but is that really who you want? You know, do you want a tax preparer that just comes out once every season to start doing taxes? Or do you want a person that really has their name on the shingle that's a CPA? I think I'd prefer that if I had the more complexity I had.
Who do you think should have, just full disclosure, I don't have a financial planner or financial advisor. I did get the graduate certificate in financial planning from Boston University, which theoretically would prepare me for the CFP exam. I was doing it just to learn, not to become a CFP. So full disclosure there, but I don't have a financial planner. I don't have a financial advisor. Like, who should have one?
Lauren, I know you. You don't need a financial most of the people, this is a stupid test. Back during COVID, if you panic during a toilet paper shortage, you might need a financial planner, you know? So that would be one test. And that, you know, when I start thinking about financial planners, I think there's two audiences. People that have real complex portfolios, a lot of assets. I'm thinking of a surgeon, a doctor running a big medical practice. Probably a good, it might be a really good target. Another person might be an unsophisticated investor, second generation wealth, that, hey, all this wealth came to you. You had nothing to do with the build. Now, can you handle it? I think those are two really good audiences. Most of the people posting every day on social media and going to work in a 9-to-5, if they would just start investing in their 401k to the company match, you know, if they would put 10 or 15% of their paycheck away, that could be the first step in being your own financial planner.
Yeah, definitely agree. I am pro getting the 401k match. I did ask that on Twitter. Actually, I think it was already X at the time. You know, should 20-somethings max their 401k? And Elon Musk said no. And so I actually agree with him that you should max your match. So that was pretty funny. But so that's an interesting point, the difference between like who should have one and who shouldn't. And this test being this emotional test, that's really what we're talking about, is emotions and maybe disproportionate emotions for the situation with the toilet paper thing. Is that what the deal is? Like, you don't want someone to have full access to their investments if they're going to make emotional decisions with it.
That's exactly right. That's why I use that metaphor. I mean, that's exactly right.
So we heard in your bio that you have FINRA licensing and you have the CFP designation. Can you talk about what goes into those? I just want people to understand when they're seeing or hearing these things, what that person has accomplished.
So I worked in financial services, like you said, for 30 something years before I left the industry about February of this year. So during that time period, FINRA will license you. They actually oversee member brokerage firms, people that actually safeguard, safekeep your stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs. And you've got to get licensed. The most common one is what's called the Series 7. That's a general securities license. And then if you get a little bit more specialized, like if you're supervising other people, you have to get another license called the 24. Mm. If you're advising on assets and not a certified financial planner, you might need something like a 65 or 66. It's a real who's who. It's an alphabet soup or a number cloud. So I have about 7 or 8 different licenses, depending upon, you know, what I was responsible for over the time in the industry.
Okay. I've seen the FINRA designations, the 63 or 65, certainly the Series 7. I've heard the Series 7 is grueling. So before we talk about like CFPs, can you talk a little bit more about literally what that's like?
The Series 7?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's grueling. You've got to study it. Let's put it this way. I think you need a 72 now to pass. Maybe it's a 75. Okay. It's 250 questions, roughly. 25 don't count, but you don't know which ones they are because they're getting like a test pool in there.
Yeah.
The national score is like a 68. So the national averages, people are going to fail that test. But it's just like preparing for any of these certification exams. 60% of the people probably pass. So if you just do what those 60% do, you're going to be fine. I passed it back in the day, studying for it, coming off the street, thinking I was going to make $100,000 my first year in the business, which I almost did. It was like year two going into year three. But I did that, studied for 2 weeks with no online test taking. It was basically a used Series 7 book and then sat for the so it's not grueling. I think in today's day, it's a person can pass it if they put themselves into it.
And what about the CFP?
The CFP, I forget. I took that about 12 years ago. And I remember that's a little bit more different. I think only it's something a small number, 25% of people pass on the first go. But the weird thing there is if you don't pass the first time, it's even less likely you're going to pass the second time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then from what I recall from the program I was in, it was a remote program from Boston University that I did. From what I recall, you also need like a bunch of hours to actually become a CFP. Is that right?
You do. Yeah. So they've kind of amplified the requirement. You need a certain number of hours, demonstrated hours related to financial planning or the industry. And you also need a 4-year degree now to even qualify for taking it. Uh-huh. So the two big filters they put in, maybe 2015, give or take.
What do you think about those filters?
I think it's You know, I think it's pretty smart because when I think about anytime you get a degree, like if you get a degree from a 4-year university, don't you want like where it's from and maybe what it's in to hold some value? Isn't that half the problem with the whole student loan crisis? You went to school and you agree with not much value. So I would say if you're going through that much work, I think it makes sense to have a little bit of barrier entry in there.
Yeah, that's interesting. That makes sense. Yes, I went to the University of Florida, which is like just, I think Wall Street Journal is called number one public school. So I would like to put this out there so that everybody knows that even though we've got some sports teams and what have you, number one public school. So it's a very good degree. I'm just going to put that out in the universe right now.
Can I do a plug for my alma mater?
Sure, of course.
Right. That Wall Street article too. I went to Clemson, as you know, Lauren, and they rated us the happiest school. I don't know what that's. I guess happiness has got to be worth something.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Dividend Hero, who I had on recently, 2 years ago, actually. So episode 64, Dividend Hero, Ross came on and he went to Clemson. So we have a lot of college football conversations, he and I, but he's obviously, Clemson's been doing a lot better than Florida in recent years.
We're having, he and I talk each other down from the rooftop on weekends these days. It's been a tough season.
Yeah, early on that was really bad. Okay, but I digress. So I also, so thank you for telling us about the financial advisors versus financial planners, FINRA, CFP. I wanted to ask about what you think as someone who's been professionally in the personal finance space for 30 years with licensing and things like that. What are your thoughts on personal finance social media accounts?
You know, when I think of social media, when I think of the internet, things can be bad and good both at the same time. It's not it all comes back to what are you doing with it? How are you using it, right? So even before social media, you could have been investing, right? You could have been talking to other people, but how were you investing, right? Were you, you know, chasing, and believe it or not, before the internet, there was day trading. It cost a lot of money, right? People would trade stocks. That's not really investing or investing long-term. So social media, I think, can kind of amplify that. We saw that, the ugly head of that a couple of years ago with the whole GameStop and the meme stock debacles.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's the best look that social media provides for investing, but I'd say it's not investing that has the bad name there. It's the person using it for their investing. So that's my thought on it. I would also, I'd say one other thought. There's a lot of bad advice on social media. 401ks are scams. There's a whole list of things like that. You can beat the market by doing this. You know, when you start hearing that, I think those are probably just life skill filters in my standpoint. You almost have to have a life skill to say, wait a second. I might be vulnerable here, but wait one second. I wasn't born yesterday. It doesn't seem, if it's too easy, there's probably something suspicious about it, right?
How can people filter bad advice from good advice? I mean, there are some social media accounts out there that look very legit and sound very legit, but if you know a little bit about personal finance, you're like, oh my God, this person doesn't know anything.
So I would say don't use social media as your starting point, right, for investing. Hopefully you're reading some reputable, you know, published books about investing. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking people like, who I think is one of the greatest people when it comes to investing, is Jack Bogle, the founder of Vanguard. Very fortunate to have known and met the guy. The guy's the real deal. He keeps it simple. He's the everyman's financial advisor, in my opinion, right? He was the father of index funds. Start there. Make that your template. So this way, when you go to places like social media, you have a blueprint of what investing looks like. and can filter it out.
That's huge. I love that. That makes so much sense. Keeping on the social media track here, do you think that social media personalities should be held accountable for giving bad advice?
One of the main reasons I did leave the financial services industry was there was, believe it or not, there was just so much regulation that I had to deal with, Lauren. In my last role, I had 52 either weekly, monthly, daily, or quarterly reports that I had to certify on. It got to be too much internally. So I say that to say this: when I hear the word, should they be held accountable or regulation, it becomes a bitter pill, because I saw the good intentions of regulation.
Yeah.
But I also saw the nonsense of it. So when you say, I'm going out on X right now, and I am just going to go check my, well, it's not the timeline, the for you, the things that are coming up. What advice, if something comes across a timeline, we'll pick one of X's favorite stocks of the day. Lately, it's been Realty Income Corp. It's a buy here. I don't think that person, that's just overhearing someone talking at the bar, in my opinion. But where I think there could be regulation, I would not be surprised. But it probably wouldn't get regulated to it really broke. This would be the people selling the courses online for $39 that really go for $2.99, but for $39 for the next 20 people that sign up for my whatever course, stock picking, how to get out of debt, how to build wealth. I could see there might be some regulation needed to that.
Interesting. Because they're making money off of it. Is that why you think?
Yeah, they're making money off of it. And I think they're holding themselves out. Remember to my earlier points, you had to be licensed in a CFP. They're holding themselves out as an expert, possibly without expertise.
Interesting.
Let's take a look. I have been to the dentist before, Lauren. I can right now. Let's get I think I can diagnose this one for you. I think if we just pull that, I think it's number 22. I remember my dentist saying that, because when I cleaned my teeth, I kept track of the numbers. 22, yeah, that's the problem spot. We're going to just drill a little bit there. See what I'm saying? I'm not qualified to be a dentist. If you follow that, why do I think it'll be legislated or regulated? Possibly not. Financial regulation, in my opinion and my observation, goes to where the biggest problem is: when a bank fails, when Sam Bankman-Fried runs off with billions of dollars. That's where it will come into these one-off, $39 courses. I don't know. I don't know if that would be, if there'd ever be enough noise to justify it.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. All right. So switching gears, you've been in the personal finance professional space for over 30 years. Now you're podcasting. How do you like it?
I love it. Thank you. So I started the Money Happy Hour podcast just about 5 months ago. I've got 30 something episodes under my belt. And Lauren, I'm really excited. Yesterday we hit it. This is a small milestone. I know you're much further along in the journey. Yesterday we had our first 30-day period where we had 1,000 downloads, on a rolling 30 days.
Yep. I remember.
It's like investing. That first $100,000 is, it doesn't mean you're wealthy or rich, but it was so much work. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed it in the sense that, I say when you get your first few episodes in, and even your first year, you're kind of developing and what it really is going to be. And what I've really enjoyed this turning into is I do a weekly episode where, I interview like a person like yourself, a successful person, kind of an inspirational story, like how you got started. And I think that provides, like what I was talking about earlier, a blueprint for people. The other thing I have started doing is, if I just have a hot topic that I see a lot, being mentioned in the news or on Twitter. A couple of weeks ago, it really got under my skin because the whole Dave Ramsey piece that he makes, that it's easy to earn 12% a year investing in mutual funds. I just stood an episode of kind of like why that doesn't make sense, how it's misleading. I overall like Dave Ramsey from a debt management standpoint.
Absolutely, yeah.
But then I also close with, don't get lost in the message. Don't kill the messenger here, Dave Ramsey. If you make 8% investing in mutual funds, just listen to the message.
Well, yeah. Well, Dave Ramsey ended up saying that. Yeah, like you're going to make 12% per year. And he did like act like that was easy. He did say, well, if I'm wrong by half, you still do well. I'm like, then run the numbers at 6%, Dave. Like, come on. You're right. That was upsetting. Really, yep. It was.
So I'm glad to do that. We got big things coming for 2024, Lauren. Once we hit this goal, we're going to amp up a couple of other touch points. What I really, really want to do and kind of why I got into this whole bit.
That's good. Yeah, I'm excited. That I'm looking back at your bio. This is the dead forever, wealth never thing.
Yeah. That's kind of a tease of what it's going to be. So my real passion is, I think there's a real big total addressable market here. It's not for the people like maybe you or I that have designations, certifications, and portfolios. It's for the people that have debt or they just don't know how. Where do I put that first dollar to get started? I'm never going to reach that in the social media space that I'm currently on. That's a bigger market I want to serve. Starting in 2024.
Yeah, in the personal finance social media sphere, I guess, it's easy to focus on investing and what should I do? But there are steps before that. A house money media, we call that, like, you're not a season one investor. You're a pre-season investor. There's stuff that you got to do first. And I think a lot of that does get ignored. Do you have bad debt? Do you have bad credit? Do you have an emergency fund? Are you budgeting? Do you know where your net worth is? Do you know where what your goals are, where you want to go? There's so much stuff that we sort of ignore that I think is really important to be talked about more. So I'm glad to hear that.
You know what I think is ignored? Even sometimes the messaging that we use on social media, almost ostracizing people that might have student loans or credit card debt.
Yeah.
If X has 500 million users and there's 40 million Americans that have student loan debt, wouldn't some of those audiences crisscross? I'm afraid we ostracize that. Like, who's going to come out and say, oh, I've got student loan debt. I have $150,000 in a humanities degree and I'm working. Who's going to post that? But they're out there. So my other that I'm going to start is, it's a safe space, right? Don't alienate those people. Bring them in.
No, that's interesting too. There's a lot of what separates the rich from the poor. Using one word, what separates rich from poor? I try to never say poor. I don't know like what it is in me, but there's just such a negative connotation, and it could be like you're just not rich yet, or you just haven't started yet, or you're pre-season, if you will. There's too much negativity around things that we're blaming people for decisions that they made. That they did the best they could with the information they had at the time. That's really unfair, in my opinion.
It is. It's a lot of posturing when we talk on X. It reminds me of very non-competitive high school football league I played in. It's pre-game pep talk among the team. Yeah, we got this. This is good. We're going to, you know what I'm saying? That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's us pumping our other teammates up. Ain't really helping anyone else out.
Exactly. I know. Necessary evil, though, to do some of that, to get the following so you do reach some of the people with some of the other in-between messages. It's kind of an interesting conundrum.
It is.
Well, Tom, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I do. I tell you what, I have even more newfound respect for you. We are about, personally, I stood up a pod on this yesterday documenting my journey. I have been called, this is a great example. I've been keeping track of my journey. My wife and I are about to downsize from a 5,000 square foot house, a lot of appreciation, and a very low mortgage and a 3% interest rate. We're going to go live mortgage free. We don't need a 5,000 square foot house. Can't keep up with it. Don't want it. And then use cash to buy a rental property. But I'm saying all that, I have got There's so many ideas on the housing front. Why are you doing that? That's the dumbest thing. Why don't you go buy something else, rent it out? I'm like, dude, it's personal. I'm not looking to add real estate complexity to my life. So I have got even more respect for you and some of the great people at House Money Media. Like, just, and this is my personal residence, navigating the real estate landscape, lining everything up. I was held victim all day for three trades to come through the house. They don't come at the right time, but then they all come together and I'm running around. It's like, and this is my house. I couldn't imagine if I had to run crosstown, meet one person. There's a lockout going on. I respect you, Lauren. God bless you.
I appreciate that. We talk about this a lot. When you've done, say, a $100,000 renovation with somebody and you call them 2 years later and you got another project for them, they pick up the phone and they come and they show up. So there's some, just so much economies of scale when it comes to just like the networking and the people that you know. After the, on the first deal, second deal, these people don't pick up the phone. Maybe they don't show up. You don't even know who to call in a lot of cases. By the time you have 10 properties, they answer when I call them. So there you go. When you get to 10, it'll get easier. How about that, Tom?
I don't know if I can make it.
And you don't have to. Do you know why? Because you're not me. And you do what works for you. Okay. How's that?
I like that. I have 11 stocks. They take good care of me.
There you go. That's perfect. I love it. All right. Well, let's end on that. Why don't you tell people how to get in touch with you?
Awesome. So you can follow me where I'm most active is on X at Savings Captain. And then also, when you're driving around looking for some inspiration, turn off the bad news. Go to any of your podcast providers and just put Money Happy Hour in now. And guess what? We almost get top of page status now just by typing those two words in. Money and happy will be there. We're going to have great interviews on there every week and some important messages.
Awesome. And you guys can follow me on Twitter/X at Adulting Is Easy, Instagram at Adulting Is Easy Real, YouTube, like I said, at Adulting Is Easy. If you like this episode, you may also like episode 37. This was about advising fees with Jude Boudreau. And the other one I mentioned, which is a fellow Clemson grad, was episode 64 about dividend stocks with Dividend Hero. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Tom and I have made adulting a little easier for you.